What's up? Happy Monday. It's the Raptor Show. It's Blake Murphy. It's Matt Bonner, who managed to lift himself out of a giant tub of ice that he's been in since Saturday's West Park Foundation Tournament of the Stars. How we doing, Matt?
I'm dying, man. You talk about an action-packed weekend between the NCAA Tournament, the West Park Foundation, VIP draft party Friday night, tournament all day Saturday. My buddy, Toronto stand-up comedian Adam Christie had his album taping Saturday night. And then Raptors game. Yes, I mean, I need to sleep for like 2 days.
And it was a Raptors game that's a big one for you. Obviously, the Spurs were in town, so you were down at the arena. And
yep, and then I went
glad hand and shaking babies,
dinner
kissing
after,
hands.
I did not have a spare second.
Well, luckily for you, it's the second night of a back-to-back, and it's a sports night game tonight.
But it's not a West Coast game.
That's true.
7 o'clock tip.
We're done with the early
6:30 pregame.
Starts.
Tune in. See me and Sherm and Brad.
Yeah. And Danielle.
Yep.
And, not me.
And you, after that really exciting Raptors-Spurs game last night, got to go to a concert.
Yeah, I was grinding the weekend as well. So obviously lots of March Madness this weekend. Saturday was like a huge, so Jays Talk Plus starts this week as well. My Blue Jays show will have episodes Tuesday, and then Thursday, Raptor show is off. We'll have a Blue Jays talk in this space. So Saturday was like a huge baseball and March Madness prep day for me, just like 12 hours on the couch, baseball prospectus open, Fangraphs open, and then all the college basketball I could handle.
That's a great day, though.
It was a terrific day. It was the amount of coffee that went down that day is legendary. And then, yeah, yesterday, fun Raptors. Obviously, some fun March Madness games. We had Duke Baylor on in the booth before Raptors
Cooper
availability
Flag,
and
balling.
Stuff. Yeah. Oh, love the, I'm going to ISO a guy, take him to the post, hit him with an elbow that's a clear offensive foul, get charged with the foul, and then talk smack that you flopped all the way back
down
the floor. Love that move.
Me too. Get flopping out of here. You need the top dogs to call it out.
And then the Raptors-Spurs game on court was the least interesting thing either of us did this weekend.
Yeah.
And then
yeah,
I went
for
to
sure.
That I went was... to see Refused at History, which was a great show. Like a late 90s Swedish hardcore band.
Any crowd surfing?
Not for me. No, there was some going on. Ran into some friends, saw some people in the music industry. Damien from a band whose name I can't say on air did a song with Refused, which was a really nice surprise as well. It was cool. It was a great show.
Did you drink any of the beer offerings at History?
I did not.
Good man.
Yeah, I'm. This is oversharing, but yeah, I'm off the beers for like just 2 weeks right now. Yeah. I just, you know, opening days.
We know about. We know my opinion of the beer selection at History.
Yeah, it's
and Budweiser.
Also, I didn't eat dinner, so I didn't, I don't know. Usually I'm a like have a couple beers at the show guy, but just not right now.
Yeah, I hear you. I gotta fill you in on beers real quick.
Okay, yeah, let's do it.
So West Park Foundation Tournament, awesome time as always. Great seeing all the former players. We had 17 teams this year, which I think was a record. I got drafted, I can't remember. I think I got drafted like 8th, I wanna say.
Oh.
7th?
What is wrong
what
with
mean,
these people?
Oh. What's wrong with what is that?
You should have been the number 2 pick.
No way.
Number 3 with Corey Maggette there now.
Corey Maggette and Jamario Moon.
Yeah.
1 and 2 every year.
Yeah, Moon we had established like, was going to be the number 1 pick.
They're like Benjamin Button.
Yeah.
They don't age somehow. I don't get it. So they're always 1 and 2. You know, you had Meta World Peace there, Ron Artest, Meta Peace Sandiford, whatever his current name is. We played his team in the first game, and before you get drafted, you have to get up and give a speech. So, you know, my speech was like, you have to appeal to the crowd, like why you should be drafted. And I was like,
your roots as a 90s wrestling guy coming back here.
No,
live mic.
And... I use logic. I'm like, listen, I take the TTC. So, you know, I'll be on time for the games. What is that face?
Oh, just, there were a lot of line 1 closures this weekend.
I'm line 2 though.
There you go.
And, number 2, I live here, so if you draft me, you won't have to pay a tariff.
Good one. Yeah.
And number 3, I'm the quintessential modern NBA player. A lot of threes and no defense.
Yeah.
And that got me 8th pick, I believe.
Good sales pitch.
So I get drafted by this team of dudes, probably like 25, 26 years old, mostly living in Liberty City. They're all from Vancouver. We're called West Coast Ballers with a Z, or a Z, I should say, in Canada.
I never remember which place says which, Z or Z. I say Z.
Canada says Zed, huh. Right?
Bad Canadian.
Like my kids say it now from going to school here.
I could never be Mike Myers in a commercial about how Canadian I am.
Yeah, no, you couldn't. You threw me off. Anyway, so
sorry.
So at the VIP draft party the night before, it's awesome. Like DJ, open bar, tons of food. It's great. My team partook in the open bar per se. This is your beer comment got me thinking about this. They got after it. They're, you know, 25, 26, Friday night, open bar, VIP event. Why not? I get it. The problem is you got to play in a basketball tournament the next day. And we had the first game on the court ready to go at 9:15 a.m., and it was ugly. These guys were hungover. I think a few of them might have still been drunk. And as a result, we lost the first game to Ron Artest's team by 1 point.
Oh,
They hit a bunch of threes. They out-analyticaled us. And furthermore, for whatever reason, they didn't have the shot clock going in the first game, so we couldn't get the ball back. We were down one with like a minute left and like just couldn't get the ball back because there's no free throws.
Yeah,
so if you foul, they just take it out. So like we lost by one, and then we won the next two games. But because we lost that game, we were out of championship
now,
contention.
Now, is that, obviously you want to do well, you want to win, but the, hey, we don't have to play an extra game, kind of a blessing in disguise by the time, like, 4 p.m. rolls around on Saturday?
Yeah, so here's the thing, like, we finished our game at, like, 3 or whatever, and March Madness is in full effect, and we want to watch the game, so we're like, I'm like, hey, let's go across the street to a bar, have a couple beers, and watch games. And hang out. And they're like, yeah, great. But we might still qualify in point differential for the championship. So I'm like, yeah, but like we probably won't. There was like an outside shot we could. I'm like, let's just go to the one across the street. And then if we get called back, we just can go across the street and we'll make our game.
Yeah, what's one beer? What's
right.
Two beers?
And that's what it turned into. It was like one of the guy's dads was like monitoring the situation. We're getting updates. He's like, I think it's like a 30% chance you have to play. So we're like, yeah, I have a second beer. And then he's like, actually, it looks like you guys are going to play. The team that we need to lose is losing. And we're like, oh, crap. All right, get the check. And then it's like, no, they end up winning. All right, yeah, I have another beer. Like, it was
and well,
back
this is
and
the
forth.
Thing, too, as any beersman knows, there's no such thing as three beers. There's one beer,
yeah,
two beers,
exactly.
And then beers.
Exactly. That's what I said. I'm like, after two, this is the tipping point. Like, we got to make a decision.
Yeah.
And at that point, we waited to make sure we weren't going to play again. But yeah, they're like, this is way better than having to go back and play the championship. I'm like, exactly.
Yeah.
I'm like, exactly.
Watch
this,
March Madness
this is way more fun. Yeah.
Yeah.
So we had a great time.
Only thing more fun than that is doing an hour show with them every day.
We got to watch, you know, Gators squeaked one out.
Yeah. Also, and then instead of watching March Madness together, me and you get to watch the Spurs beat the Raptors by, what was the final score? 34 last night, 123-89.
But hold on, real quick, shout out Gators. Gators made the Sweet 16.
Yeah, by the
tough game against
the skin
UConn.
Of their teeth.
Clayton hit a couple big threes, got some calls. The whistle went their way. We'll take it. Survive in advance. SEC, 7 teams in the Sweet 16.
Yeah, what do you think of that? So we'll talk about the Raptors-Spurs game. There's not a ton to dissect
there
specifically.
This is why I'm.
Yeah, we've got Megan McCree coming on in the second half of the show to talk about the Wizards game tonight. But from a March Madness perspective, we can get into a lot. Prospect-wise, actually, in looking back at which prospects we talked about last week, I think we did a pretty good job in terms of who had big weekends and whose stock was up or at least had like a little bit of, you know, Jakusonis, who we didn't talk about. He's probably the one top guy we didn't talk about a lot from Illinois. He had a really good first game, a shakier second game. Same thing for Will Riley from Illinois, my Kitchener guy. But Jeremiah Fears, really good showing. Derek Queen, who we talked about a lot, huge
travel.
Game winner. Probably a travel. Neek Clifford on Colorado State, who came up on the show, had like two really, really good games. So we did a good job there, I think. So the Sweet 16, you mentioned SEC sets a record for number of teams from one conference in the Sweet 16. It is also the first time that there is no mid-major in the Sweet 16. The 16 come entirely from the Power Four conferences. The quote-unquote worst team in the Sweet 16 is Arkansas, who are a 10 seed.
I can explain this.
But they're from the
if
SEC.
You want me to.
Yeah.
I'm sure you could too.
Mostly
do you
want
to do it?
I want your take on, like, you know, how it gets to this point and if it's a positive for the tournament. Because, like, all the matchups from here look unbelievable on paper, but there's no Cinderella. There's no, you know, it's – you want, like, one or two of those teams in there maybe – for that element, the game quality is going to be awesome.
Yeah. The reason this happened, in my opinion, is because of NIL. Follow me here. In the past, the advantage the mid-majors had was that if you went to a mid-major, you were probably staying 4 years. So they had tremendous continuity. They had older, experienced players. And a lot of the majors were more guys that were likely to be one and done, leave early. Like, their best players I'm talking about. Yeah. So it's like
the Kentucky model.
Yeah, it's like harder to, like, basketball is one of those sports, and we've seen it with the Raptors, where, like, if a team has, like, good chemistry and knows how to play and plays hard, they can beat a more talented team, usually. And that's what these mid-majors have been doing. And we've seen it with the Raptors. Like, they're playing, you know, G League guys, 10-day guys, two-way guys, and they're winning games against other teams because our guys like that are playing the right way and playing hard and playing together, and they can get wins. Same thing at the college level. That's kind of been equalized by NIL because now most of the majors are recruiting from the transfer portal. So they're getting guys that didn't go pro but are, like, really good college players and have experience. So the teams are getting older and better. The majors aren't recruiting high school players as much. Like if you want to win and get the best talent, you don't go, all right, let's get three McDonald's All-Americans and we're going to be in contention. That doesn't really fly anymore.
Let's get one and let's surround them with some vets.
And let's go to the transfer portal and buy this guy, and this guy who averaged 14 and 8 last year. This guy averaged 17 and 6 last year.
Great example right now, Cam Williams from Tulane declared this morning he's entering the transfer portal. He'll probably test the NBA draft waters, according to Jonathan Givony of ESPN. But another guy who, like, yeah, if you were building with Tulane, who's obviously not a power school, and now, I made all freshman team. Now I've got more offers. Now I've got more opportunities.
Or you get guys that went to a mid-major for 3 years and balled out, and they're like, I got one more year. I want to go to a Power 5 conference and make a bunch of money and see what I can do there.
Yeah, and so maybe improve my visibility for the draft.
So these teams have gotten older, more experienced, and deeper and talented that way, which kind of equalizes the advantage that mid-majors had up until this point.
So that's how it happens, and that's a great explanation of why it ends up this way.
I don't know for sure.
No, I think those two things together, NIL and the transfer portal, it makes a ton of sense why it would work that way. And then there's also probably a little bit of, when you build power conferences that are as powerful as the SEC, there's a little bit of self-fulfilling prophecy where, like, if this conference is so much better, that, like, the chances of a mid-major upsetting an SEC team get narrower and narrower, the better the SEC is.
Because the SEC is just going to buy the best players from the mid-major conference.
Yeah, and they spent the whole season, like, Arkansas is a 10 seed. They spent the whole season playing better SEC teams, like the iron sharpens iron of it. They're ready to go.
That's part of it.
You're not going to catch that team sleeping. So that's how it happens. The other question is this... And, like, the SEC being as good as it is great for SEC conference basketball. Do you think it's a positive for the tournament or a negative or a neutral that, hey, we're in the Sweet 16 now and it's power conference teams only?
I mean, in a vacuum overall, I don't like it.
Yeah.
I, to your point, I think it's better to have these Cinderella surprise teams not just make the tournament. They're always going to be conference champion, always gets in. But, like, have a chance to advance, and it looks like that margin is shrunk under this new climate. Being an SEC guy, I love it. SEC has always been a great basketball conference, but not like this. This is like 80s Big East level. We've never seen anything like this, and it's kind of cool.
Yeah,
I feel
this year, in part because the SEC has been so good, but also because you're a Gators guy and, like, we've talked about the SEC a couple times on the show, I just feel like I know the SEC teams a little better anyway. I'm like, I'm even more prepared for the Sweet 16 beyond just, like, prospect hunting.
And I didn't trust it either. Like, because historically it hasn't been like this, when I saw them get 14 teams in and I'm filling out my bracket, I'm like, man, does the 7th place SEC team have a chance to get to the Sweet 16? Yeah. No, that can't be right. Like, no way, but... Surprise.
Yeah. Here's the other question that follows from this. I have done very well on my brackets so far. Austin Mackey, who's usually with us on the show, is ahead of me in the pool here, but I'm in, I think, first in one and third in the other. Does this lessen the bragging rights of doing well in a bracket if, like all that this tells me now is that I leaned heavily toward power conference teams?
No, it's still there's. I think I saw on the ESPN challenge, there's like one perfect bracket left. Like, millions of people enter. So you should still be proud.
Yeah, I certainly don't really have a perfect bracket,
it's still
but
chaos.
I'm doing okay.
Yeah, even if you look at the seeds in the Sweet 16, there's one bracket where 1 through 4, every other one is, you know, all jumbled up.
Yeah.
So you should still be proud. I was talking some smack to the Florida State alum I saw yesterday. Scotty Barnes, Devin Vassell. You know, I gave him a little point to the hat, like Gators in the Sweet 16. Yeah.
I had a quick chat with Jamal Shedd about Houston almost getting knocked off by Gonzaga on Saturday. He was pretty locked in for that one.
Yep. Yeah,
that's fun.
But the Florida State thing.
Of course.
It feels great. And I've been on the receiving end of that plenty of times, so it was nice to dish it.
Yeah. How did Vassell take it?
He just laughed. Yeah. I don't know if Scotty realized I went to Florida, but...
Yeah, I figured, although you were wearing the Florida hat yesterday at the game.
Yeah, I don't know. He was walking off the court. I don't think his mind was on that as much. But Devin had a good laugh at it.
That's great. Okay, before we pivot to the Raptors game, obviously Walter Clayton had an awesome game for Florida. Anyone else stand out to you from a prospect perspective or just you know, guys that really popped for you watching this weekend?
Yeah, I mean, I was curious about that Duke-Baylor game because you had Edgecombe, who we've talked about, going up against Cooper Flagg. And it was insanely obvious Cooper Flagg's the guy.
Yeah. like Edgecombe's more in the like, hey, do you look better than Con Knipple?
Yep, exactly.
And that's more what you're looking at than like Cooper Flagg.
But Edgecombe's got a lot of hype this season and coming in.
And he's a good defender. He's just giving up like 6 inches to Cooper Flagg.
Yep, exactly. But, you know, Cooper Flagg just makes the right play every single time. He's so efficient. I was really impressed with his defense too.
Yeah.
Like his ability to like contest shots and like anticipate what guys are going to do. Like he almost like he can like sense, all right, the guy's trying to drive and he'll give the cushion, or like the guy's going to pull up and shoot. And he's like a split second quick to the contest. I don't know if I'm explaining this right. Like his anticipatory skills on the ball and being able to read what the offensive player is thinking is amazing.
Yeah, it's great. I also thought Kamon Malawach had a really good defensive game in that one and a good defensive weekend in general. But still, like, I think anyone who watched those two games would come away digging in on what their opinion of Malawach already is. If you're enamored with the defense and 7'2" ability to navigate space defensively and make not just block shots, but like make it hard to get a shot off in general, I think you would come away even happier. But if you're the type of person who's like, I don't know what he can do offensively, he only took 3 field goals yesterday. And like he can get, at least right now, he does not rebound at the level of his size. Like you see 7'2", 250.
Yeah,
like
this, 6 rebounds or something.
Like, yeah. And like getting, he almost seems like he seems too nice fighting for rebounds. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, like, I know what you mean.
He's like he's going like this and doesn't want to hit someone with an elbow. He needs to get a little meaner.
Yeah, I agree.
But I obviously still a very, very positive weekend for him defensively. And then, Derek Queen with the big game winner yesterday. You thought it was a travel. It probably was, but you can't make that call in that spot, right?
I must have rewound and watched that play 12 times. And I think you had to let it go because if you watch, when he goes to gather, it's not clean. He kind of jumbles it a little bit. And because of that, I think that let him get that extra step because it's 2 steps after.
He doesn't have possession.
Exactly. It's 2 steps after the gather. And because he like screwed the gather up, not on purpose, like if he had gathered it cleanly, like he intended to, it definitely would have been a travel. But because he like kind of bobbled the gather, it allowed him to get an extra step. Kind of a gray area in the rule book, if you ask me.
We also heard after the game that a coach in the huddle, you know, trying to draw up a play, he asked for the ball. He said, give me that thing. I want it, which is you always like out of your prospects and your college players.
Yeah, exactly. He wants to embrace the big moment, the big pressure moment.
And he came through.
Not everybody has that.
Yeah, he came through. Okay. Deep sigh here. Reset. Change the energy level.
God.
Raptors lost 123-89 to the Spurs.
We left 5 minutes for this.
No, I do want to talk some Spurs stuff, though, because basically, like, look, the Raptors, they rested Emmanuel Quickley and Jakob Poeltl. Chris Boucher was out sick. RJ Barrett looked a little rusty after missing 4 of the last 5. Jacoby was his first game in a couple weeks here. We know the score when it comes to the Raptors. This is a Spurs team, though, that without Victor Wembanyama, without De'Aaron Fox, has won a couple games in a row. They're actually not that far out of a playoff spot in the West. I don't think they're going to push for it, but they looked like they did not look like a team that is tanking the way everyone else on the Raptors schedule lately has been. And I'm just wondering your thoughts on when you get ahead to next year and you have hopefully Victor Wembanyama back with the blood clot issues behind him, you get De'Aaron Fox back, suddenly Devin Vassell and Stephon Castle are your 3 and 4, not your 1 and 2. This is like, you really don't have to squint to see the Spurs being pretty good next year.
No, for sure. And you forgot about Mamu.
Yeah.
Mamu's been on a tear.
13 points in 16 minutes last night. 13 and 7
in 16 minutes. That dude's been on a tear. I love teams that are out of the playoffs, but still have good vibes, good chemistry, play hard, play together. The Raptors have it. The Spurs had it. You could feel it. To your point, it didn't feel like a team that was – I don't think the Spurs are tanking, but they're probably not making the playoffs. They've been dealt two huge blows with Wemby going out and Fox going out for the season. But they're still out there having fun, playing hard. And I have so much respect for teams that can do that because it's such a long NBA season. And you get to the last 10, 15 games, and you're not really playing for anything. It takes a lot of mental toughness and a lot of, I don't know what the word is, like chemistry foundation to carry through and keep playing like that the rest of the season. And so it was... In that regard, it was fun seeing that Castle Rookie of the Year. Is that what we're thinking?
I mean, it's a pretty tight race. Like, I know Atlanta really wants Reese Shea the way he's come on and is like a good defensive prospect. Memphis might be in a weird spot where Jalen Wells and Zach Edey might like cannibalize each other. Like, statistically, they're probably the two best rookies. Like, if you care about the team winning component, but like, I can't imagine, given the number of people in the mix, that many people are going to put both of them on their ballot. Like, what if Jalen Wells gets half the votes, Zach Edey gets half the votes, and Castle slides in as a,
yeah,
you know, as a number three? It's like having a three-party system in Canada in the upcoming federal election.
Wait, there's another election? Did we just have an election?
Yeah, but that was provincial. Now we got an April 28th
this is all new to me.
Federal election.
Okay.
Yeah. So
hopefully there's better voter turnout this time. Get out and vote, everybody.
Almost can't be worse. Castle's certainly in the mix. I haven't looked at the odds recently, but I would imagine him, Reese Shea, and then both the Grizzlies guys, Jalen Wells and Zach Edey, are the leading candidates. Alex Saar probably turned it on a little too late.
Yeah, I feel like Castle's going to get it, personally. He's played really well the second half of the season. That game was over in the first quarter. It was 36-16. Raptors had 10 turnovers. Spurs scored 18 points in the first quarter alone off those 10 turnovers. That's a wrap. I know it's a 48-minute game, but...
You're down 20 like that.
You could tell. And then the other big stat that jumped out at me, besides the turnovers, Raptors had 21. Spurs only 14 was the free throws.
13 attempts for the Raptors.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to get back into a game when you shoot 13 free throws and the opposing team shoots 32. But, you know, it was, I don't know. The Spurs made a bunch of threes. I mean, they only ended with 14, but they were really hot in the first half. Other than that, like, I'm looking at my notes and it's like, well, Mary J. Blige and Kelly Rowland were at the game.
And Mario. Yeah. Don't leave out Mario.
I'm not a big Mario fan.
All right.
Kelly Rowland and Mary J. Blige. Oh, yeah.
They're
on my playlist.
R&B royalty, man. Yeah,
Real Love, all time. Jamming 94.5 Boston growing up. Paula Bonner in the car driving us to school. Bumping Real Love. Can't beat that. Kelly Rowland, Destiny's Child, obviously.
Yeah.
Speaking of Destiny's Child, if I have to see that Beyonce commercial one more time... My God.
You don't want to be her Levi jeans?
I mean, it's on every commercial break. What are we like? What is their marketing budget? Like $1 billion?
Yeah, I don't
know. It's insane.
Or ad space is just very, very cheap.
But anyways, Kelly Rowland, she had the song with Nelly, My Boo, right?
Yeah.
Great song.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not as familiar with her.
We were talking
solo
about karaoke last week.
Yeah.
It's a good karaoke duet song for sure.
Yeah. I'd have to freshen myself up on the lyrics. Also, I'm not a good enough singer to do R&B. Yeah, but I'm not a good enough singer to do R&B stuff. You want me to do Refuse, the screamy parts of the concert I was at last night? Yeah.
I don't know how that would go over at a karaoke spot.
Not well. I've done it. I mean, I've done like probably the shoutiest thing I've done is like Taking Back Sunday or something like that.
How many tall boys does it take for you to do a screaming karaoke set?
Probably 4 or 5.
Okay. That's it?
Yeah.
I would have said like 10.
Nah.
All right.
Nah. It also depends on the company, right? Like if we're at Owl Club, that's a bigger crowd of people that I don't know who like some of them this was not your experience recently, but my experience there in the past has been some people take it pretty seriously. Then it might take me like 7 or 8. But if it's like close friends, especially if it's one of those like small rooms in Koreatown or something like that, I'll bust it out. I'll bust it out a little earlier.
Korean barbecue.
Mm. There you go. Yeah, you could double the Korean barbecue. Then you go to the
smaller karaoke room.
Yeah, we did that shortly after the NBA championship. Like a bunch of us writers went out. It was really fun. What else did I have from this game? Oh, I looked up, by the way, Steph Castle is the leading favorite on the betting sites, at least for rookie of the year right now. What did you make of Vassell's game? I know we don't need to get like crazy serious about a game that wasn't competitive, but 25-6-3, three stocks plus 37 in just 30 minutes, 11-14. This, like, I kept thinking back to like, man, this is what it looks like with him as a number one against a bad team. And then next year he's going to be like at highest number three on the pecking order. Well, it really seems like they nailed, like, hey, what does a support cast look like around Wemby so far?
Yeah, and remember when Vassell got drafted, it was like Danny Green, like 3-and-D prototype, star in your role. He's really expanded his game. He's way more athletic than I think people realize, like going to the hoop and finishing and dunking. He's a tremendous defender. He's got mid-range game. He can shoot threes. He can get to the hoop. He signed an extension that, at first, you were like, whoa. Like, he kind of did it before he really proved himself. And I remember thinking, like, wow, that's a lot of money.
But now, $27 million the next couple years.
That's not bad. That's not bad for, like, a legit number three, like a good number three.
Yeah.
The only issue with him is staying healthy. He's often injured in and out of the lineup. And in today's NBA, your ability to be available and on the court is so important if you're trying to get in the playoffs and do something. So yeah. I think health is the biggest question mark for him moving forward. Otherwise,
but yeah,
I agree with you.
Purely contract-wise, like same age as RJ, same contract, but a little longer. So you have him under control more. You know, less than Quickly and Barnes are going to be making on their next deals. Pretty good. This is why, like, in a rising cap environment, giving a player that you know is at least good the 25% max is not that. Like, giving Scottie Barnes a 25% max as the cap's going up 10% every year is not that risky. Like, you already know he's at least pretty good.
And if they're young and they're going to keep getting better.
Yeah.
It ends up being a good deal.
Yeah.
It might not be right when they sign it. You're like, oh, you know, you got to prove this and that. But if it, like, organizations know what they have in general, and they're going to bet on the players they think are going to get there.
Yeah. Only other note from the Spurs. So they started Chris Paul, Harrison Barnes, and Bismack Biyombo, which is a nice exercise in like, oh, having adults in the room. And Mitch Johnson talked about this a little bit before the game. Having adults in the room helps. Bismack, who we obviously love here very much, 8 points, 9 rebounds, 3 assists in 23 minutes. That kind of stat line from Biyombo, that tells you Wemby's just a system player, right? Like, business getting the same kind of stats, 3 dimes, you know?
Yeah, you can plug anybody in there.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, Raptors side of this. The turnovers were obviously a big thing. Do you have much at the individual level? Like, Jamal Shedd had a career scoring night. He was probably the only real positive, right?
Yeah, I mean, Scotty was solid, but it's hard to glean anything because the game was a blowout.
And Scotty was salt, like 22-6-6 on 8 of 11 shooting, but he also had 6 turnovers.
Yeah, Scotty and RJ 6 turnovers each. Obviously, that's not great. They don't normally have that many turnovers, though. It's kind of an outlier situation.
Yeah, RJ just looked rusty. I know he hadn't taken that much time off, but he sat 4 of the last 5 games. Didn't really get into his scoring package that efficiently. The threes were like all way off.
Was he on the road trip?
He was there, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, he was sick and then rested.
Gotcha.
Yeah, I think everyone. And then
second time getting sick this season.
Yeah, and then Boucher caught it too, I guess, because he was the late scratch with an illness. Because obviously he would have played like 30 minutes otherwise. Boucher's obviously going to play. Jacoby Walter returned, looked a little rusty, but nice to see him back. Obviously the hip groin issue wasn't quite as bad as maybe feared, given that he's back yet. If anyone missed it, there was no update on Grady Dick, and there was a Brandon Ingram update that's not really an update. He's doing running and lateral movement. Ask again in 10 days is what we got told, but he's still not doing contact or anything like that. And then, the only other thing of note really is Castleton's got one game left. This is his last game on his second 10-day, so they got to make a decision on him after tonight.
Yeah.
Didn't think he played particularly well yesterday, but again, one guy was not the problem.
When you say decision, for anyone who doesn't know, you cannot sign a third 10-day.
Right.
So
sign him for the rest of the season.
How does that work? It's prorated on like the minimum or whatever? Yeah. So it probably doesn't cost a ton.
No, and they have enough room under the tax to do it. It's just like, do you want to lock into him or do you want to try someone at, give someone else a look?
Yep.
And I don't know, like the G League season ends this week, so maybe there's someone down there, but the big man pool in the G League is very thin. So
yeah, and if you want to rest Jakob, you probably need another center.
Yeah, so I'd imagine.
Unless you want to play your boy O'Rob.
I mean, even then, though, right? Like last night, Jakob sat and those guys split the minutes right down the middle. Like, you're not going to play Robinson 48 minutes.
That's what I'm saying, unless you want to.
Yeah, I mean, they did start and play Malik Williams 31 minutes in a game last year, like fresh out of the G League. So I wouldn't put a pass them in the final days of the season, but yeah, it's not a high priority, a high priority thing. Okay, so the other relevant thing from last night, the Miami Heat won. They snapped a 10-game losing streak, and this is important because if you're looking at the lottery standings, yes, the Raptors have quote-unquote won too many games, and Brooklyn and Philly have passed them by a game. The Raptors are one win ahead of those two teams. They have three games left against those teams, so could potentially still slide below them, but realistically, it looks like they're going to finish seventh. And if you were worried about the other side, if, hey, the Raptors only have one game left against a winning team, what if they win too many down the stretch? They're now six games clear of everyone ahead of them with 11 to go. And Miami, which is the team that's closest to them, has incentive to make the play-in.
I was worried about the Spurs, too, before their three-game win streak.
Yeah. You felt less comfortable than I did on Friday when we talked about this off-air, but you feel pretty good now, six games clear with 11 to go?
Yeah, I think I do.
Okay.
I mean, yeah.
Like, they're going to win a couple of these, but Miami doesn't have, like, the toughest of schedules. And again, Miami is trying to win.
Miami has pride.
Yeah. They've also got Philly, Washington,
right.
Philly, Chicago, New Orleans, Washington on their schedule left.
They're going to win some of those games. Yeah, I feel good now.
You'd hope. Shout out to Andrew Wiggins with 42 helping the Raptors out yesterday.
Good man.
Okay. There's a game tonight. It's against the Wizards, second night of a back-to-back. I imagine some guys will rest. Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll set you up for that. We'll talk to Megan McPeak of the Wizards as well. Catch up with our old friend, formerly the 905 play-by-play voice, now sideline for the Wizards, play-by-play for the Mystics. Be great to catch up with Megan, and we'll get you set for Raptors-Wizards tonight. Also, it's Raptors Delight tonight, part four of that documentary series. We'll play you a trailer of that. All that's next as the Raptors show continues with Blake Murphy and Matt Bonner.
Big opinions and in-depth conversations covering the Leafs, Jays, Raptors, and the NFL. The J.D. Bunkin Podcast. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the Raptors show. Blake Murphy and Matt Bonner with you. Raptors at Wizards tonight on SportsCenter. So you'll get more Matt Bonner pregame, halftime, and postgame. And if you want a little bit more of me, or even if you don't, you could check out part four of our Raptors Delight documentary series covering the 30-year history of the franchise. The last one was the Kyle and DeMar era. This is obviously the championship era. Kawhi is there. Danny Green is there. Never a bad time to relive the championship. Here's a quick trailer of the Raptors Delight episode 4 that will debut after Raptors Wizards tonight.
You know, I wanted to make history here, and that's all I did.
And somebody comes to you and says, would you trade your best friend to win a championship? That's a tough question to answer.
Kawhi Leonard is a Raptor.
And DeMar DeRozan is heading to San Antonio.
I think it's lunacy.
Genius. They are not stupid.
What does that tell you? Everybody crazy.
What? Wait, that's Kawhi. Kawhi Leonard.
The Kawhi deal gave us the best chance to win.
I was so hurt. That was my first heartbreak.
Kyle was pissed that DeMar got traded.
His anger gave me anger.
Defended by Simmons. Is this the dagger?
When that ball was bouncing.
Bouncing. Bouncing.
It bounces.
And a third bounce.
Four bounces.
Greatest bounce in Toronto Raptors history.
God! Yeah, he made it.
The NBA title is yours.
The We Are wanted to make history.
Never a bad time for those clips and to relive those memories. Again, that is Raptors Delight Part 4. A condensed version of it will air after the game tonight on Sportsnet 1. You can check out the full version on sportsnet.ca beginning at 6 p.m. That will also be up on the Sportsnet YouTube channel and Sportsnet Plus. I don't know how much I'm in this one. I was in the third one more than I expected to be, the Kyle and DeMar. It should be fun. Probably more fun than Raptors Wizards, right?
more fun than being a Wizards fan. We were talking about Mumford & Sons. They had a concert last night here in Toronto. And I brought up the Hopeless Wanderer video with Bateman, Ed Helms, Sudeikis, and Will Forte. And I feel like that's like the theme song of a Wizards fan these days.
Hopeless Wanderer.
Hopeless Wanderer.
At least Alex Sarr's played a little bit better of late. But yeah, it feels a couple lucky breaks, a couple trades, a couple draft picks away from them having their own Wizards Delight Part 4 championship. Yeah. Thing. It's been a long time in the wilderness for them. Let's see how our pal Megan McPeak is doing through it all. She is sidelined for the Wizards, play-by-play for the Mystics, formerly voice of Raptors 905 here. Good friend Megan McPeak joins us now. Megan, how are we doing?
Blake, Matt, how you doing?
Excellent, excellent. Second night of a back-to-back. Raptors lost by 30-plus last night. So, yeah, we'll see how it goes against a lot of Raptors Wizards down the stretch here. How are you doing with how the season's gone?
Listen. This schedule is the schedule. Every team, as you both know, go through their own, you know, gauntlet part of the schedule. The Wizards just happens to be the final, quarter of the season of the schedule. So coming off of a 13-day road trip across, you include that double dip with the Raptors, two countries, three time zones, I believe, over 5,000 miles. To come back and do a back-to-back, to then go 5-7 nights. You know, I love my job. I can't complain. The schedule is the schedule. It is what it is.
Yeah, but it's, you know, you can't complain, but I feel you. I understand what you're going through. Maybe not even because I don't travel anymore, so I don't quite. But, hey, at least there was, for a stretch of time there, a little bit better basketball from the Wizards. And I know they've dropped four in a row, but Megan, there was a stretch there where they'd won 6 of 10. I know that Wizards fans probably are looking at the reverse standings and things like that, but what did you see in that stretch where the Wizards were actually winning a few more games and maybe starting to build something there?
In all honesty, guys, even though they've dropped a few here as of late, the biggest thing that you've noticed with this team is the growth from the first game to now with 15-ish games remaining. It's been the growth. Like, you have a very, very young team, and you guys understand this with the Raptors. They're young as well too. Anytime you put a group of young guys together, you toss in some vets, maybe some, you know, mid career vets, if you will, you're going to have a situation where the basketball is not the sexiest. It's not the best. However, if you truly watch the game, the eye test will tell you one thing and the numbers will tell you another. And then when those numbers and the eye test start to meet each other, especially for the younger guys that you're trying to develop, trying to grow, that are just coming out of college or just coming from overseas and are new to the NBA game, they have to adapt. Like, the jump from college or overseas to the NBA, you have to give guys grace because it takes more than 5 games to get used to it. And the biggest thing I would say is, and we've been talking about it the last few games on broadcast, is for everybody who wanted to talk all that smack and jump on Twitter during Summer League after Alex Sarr had that very ugly shooting stint, who's getting the last laugh now? Because he looks like a completely different type of player. Doesn't look like a guy who went 0 for 12 in Summer League. So that's where the eye test comes in and then where the numbers start to meet it. So as much as the win and loss column tells you one thing, what I have been seeing from this team has been consistent growth from training camp to where we are right now. And every single one of those rookies that they drafted have far exceeded expectations for the fans here.
When you talk about growth on a personnel level, like an individual player level, that's one thing. What about growth on a team level? When you look at what everyone writes, like what team would be the best team for Cooper Flagg? The Washington Wizards never come on there. Everyone's like, God, I hope he doesn't end up on the Washington Wizards. I don't know if that's fair, but like, what has Coach Brian Keefe done to kind of try to transform that narrative of how they play as a team and that type of growth throughout the season?
I mean, Matt and Blake, you played in the league, Matt. You understand what the cultural narrative has been around the Wizards organization for what feels like decades now. And you look at what you're trying to build. The only way you can build a successful franchise is to have the right culture, to have the right type of character people, not just on the roster, but on your coaching staff, in your front office, and in your support staff. And I would say that has probably been the biggest focus for Michael Winger, who's president of Monumental Basketball, and the Wizards GM, Will Dawkins. The moment they stepped foot in D.C., though, that was the biggest thing they spoke about, was shifting the cultural narrative surrounding this organization to put it and bring it to a point where players want to play here, fans want to keep supporting, and you're not dealing with the same, Wizards don't want to have a player, top type player doesn't want to play there because nothing's going to happen, they're not going to grow, this, that, and the third. And the way you shift your culture is by holding accountability. So the accountability doesn't just go to the players. It starts with Brian Keefe. He allows his staff to hold him accountable. He has a very open line of communication from players to coaches and vice versa. He allows, especially you make trades, you bring in a guy like a Marcus Smart, a Chris Middleton. You add them to the mix of already having a Malcolm Brogdon and a Rashawn Holmes. And as I look at Corey Kispert, he's kind of that mid-career vet, because with the age of this team, he is now the longest tenured Wizards player. So you have to have the right character guys who are willing to not only understand the situation here with regards to winning and losing, but those guys want to compete. And the best way to have your vets compete is to allow them to hold the young guys accountable. So you watch games, especially since the trade deadline, those guys, whether they are active or not, they are having conversations with guys in game from the bench. You see it we see it at shoot arounds and whatnot. So that has been the biggest shift since the new front office has taken over, is trying to shift that cultural narrative so that those writings, as you talked about, Matt, the Wizards are then started to be mentioned in where top tier prospects should want to land, do want to land, and are part of that conversation.
Yeah, Chris Middleton, obviously a big trade deadline addition in terms of that veteran cultural element. Malcolm Brogdon, who's been there all year, and I think people initially thought, oh, maybe he'd be a buyout or a trade candidate, but by, you know, hearing you tell it and talking to other people, you know, that vet leadership that he's provided has been pretty good. And it's important because you mentioned the rookies off the top here. Four guys who were first-round picks last year, they weren't all Wizards picked, but they picked up A.J. Johnson. So Alex Saar, Bub Carrington, A.J. Johnson, Jalen Martin's on a two-way, and then a Canadian in Keyshawn George. Alex Saar obviously, you know, draws the headline as the top pick and the guy that, as the number two overall pick, a lot of the focus is on. But Keyshawn George, a guy we're keeping an eye on here in Canada. Where have you seen the growth from him, Megan, and his potential, you know, to maybe grow into a pretty solid role player for that Wizards group?
I would actually take it to the point of saying where Marcus Smart has seen the biggest growth. The two of them have a fantastic relationship, and it's the defensive side. Keyshawn is long, athletic, and lengthy. Obviously, you know, as a rookie, he has the strength disadvantage because he has not had the opportunity to work with a nutritionist at the NBA level, work with a chef, obviously put in the work in the weight room to put on that weight. But they will get to that point where he gets stronger, bigger, and then you add that to his 6'8", 6'9", frame and his wingspan. He can be a menace defensively for people because of that length. He has big hands. And let me put it in perspective from the standpoint of let me be clear as well, too, preface this. I am not saying that they are the exact same player. I am just using it as an example for the length and wingspan. Kawhi Leonard, how he can give you that space defensively but still contest a shot because of his length and his arm span. That is similar to a Keyshawn George. And the one thing Marcus has consistently said about him since joining the team at the trade deadline is that as a defender and a defensive player of the year and one of the only guards to do it outside of the glove, I can live with him fouling a lot because I would rather have a teammate and a player who I don't have to tell to turn on the aggressiveness. And then you add in the fact he is learning from Marcus Smart the tricks of the trade, the little intricacies of how you can utilize your size, your length to your advantage to frustrate the opponent, but also to let the officials know I'm an aggressive defender, so you now have to referee me and officiate me a little bit different than some guy who may not have my aggressiveness. Keyshawn has gotten into foul trouble. He has admitted that that is something he needs to work on. But again, that means you're setting yourself up to have a very good career as a defender if you can keep the trajectory with which he's gone. And then you add in the fact the kid's knocking down three-point shot now, and he's doing it with a lot of confidence on the offensive end. He's trying to turn himself into that type of player who every coach wants because he's that 3-and-D two-way player and wants to play on both ends of the floor.
And hopefully Marcus Smart doesn't teach him the art of the flop. real quick, we only have a couple minutes, but Tristan Vukovic is a guy who's had three straight 17-point games, been shooting 50% from three during that span. For Raptors fans who might not be familiar, what can we expect to see from him?
Yeah, he's one of those guys who, unfortunately, the rotation with injuries, it's helped him, but then also, too, it's hurt him with trying to get minutes. But that road trip, as you mentioned, those three straight games, he's a gamer. When they got him last year, he didn't come until late into the season, literally right off the plane from Belgrade, joined us in Chicago, and immediately had like a 15, 17-point game. And we were all like, wait, where's this kid been? And he's a 7-footer. So he can shoot the three. He stretches the floor. He's a true stretch big. He can play the 4 or 5. His biggest thing that I think he would probably want to work on and need to work on is just his lateral quickness with dealing with stronger bigs, maybe trying to use his athleticism to his advantage in that capacity when he does have the strength disadvantage or the footwork disadvantage. But he does have some really great footwork because he is that shooter. And they've tried to play him and Alex together, which has had some bright spots, but it's also had some tough spots because they kind of play very similar. However, Alex has now gotten a lot more comfortable in that pick and roll situation as the roller. So we may try to see a little bit more of the Sar Vukovic combination down the stretch here, but he's a really nice kid that could have a definite good career as that stretch five.
Well, that'll be
a lot of size.
Yeah, that'll be really fun to watch and see how that dual big lineup looks maybe tonight. Megan, thank you so much for doing this. Glad we were able to make it work.
Guys, I appreciate it.
Thank you, Megan.
Megan McPeak for the Wizards and the Mystics, formerly 905, Capital City Go-Go. Justin Champagne, also former 905 on the Wizards. We'll see Champagne twins on back-to-back nights, interestingly enough.
Maybe they'll get in a fight.
No, they're one place for the Spurs, one place for the Wizards.
Oh, I thought you meant they were going to play each other.
No, Raptors get one each night. Time now for Fast
My
Break.
Brought to you. I got to tell you, I am exhausted.
That's all right. We got 2 minutes
left. I zoned out.
And one of those minutes is all me. Time now for Fast Break, brought to you by BetMGM, the sportsbook born in Vegas. We got Raptors at Wizards at 7 o'clock on Sportsnet and on 590 Sportsnet The Fan. Wizards are 1.5-point favorites, over-under set at 228.5. Raptors are on a back-to-back, so we don't have an injury report, but Ingram, Dick, Shamshe remain out. I assume there's going to be rest on the second night of a back-to-back, given the lottery situation and that Poeltl and Quickley rested last night, but we don't have an update on that yet. On the Wizards side, Bilal Coulibaly and Corey Kispert and Malcolm Brogdon and Sadiq Bey are all out. I believe they're all out for the season, although Sadiq Bey is now practicing at the G League level, which is nice to see as he works his way back. Wizards team 15-55. They're dead last, but they're only one game removed from Utah for the worst record in the league. So they need losses. They've dropped 4 in a row after unexpectedly winning 6 of 10. The Raptors have also lost 4 in a row after unexpectedly winning 15 of 27. They are 24-47, 7th in the lottery standings, 6 games removed from 8th, as we covered, and 1 game removed from Brooklyn and Philly in the other direction. That was Fast Break, brought to you by BetMGM, the sportsbook born in Vegas. Thanks to Megan McPeak for joining us, to Amit Mon, Jake Schultz, and Jennifer Rolnick behind the glass. As a reminder, it's Raptors-Wizards at 7 o'clock tonight on Sportsnet and 590, and Raptors Delight, part 4 of that documentary, a condensed version airing on Sportsnet 1 after the game. Full version available on Sportsnet.ca, Sportsnet YouTube, and Sportsnet Plus as of 6 p.m. Matt, you going to get a nap in or what?
Calf massage and a nap. Let's go.
Yeah, that's not me. That's Amit's department. If you need a calf massage, I will not be helping you out with that.
I'm so sore.
Yeah, recovery cardio. I know you got your gym stuff on you. Recovery cardio. Yep. You'll be fine. All right, we'll be back tomorrow to break that one down. We'll talk some more NBA draft stuff with Jeremy Wu of ESPN as well tomorrow. Have a wonderful Monday.